And now for something completely different.
Smoke medical weed every day.
The following thoughts on Hoppy Hour represent Brian Hoppy and Facet. Listener discretion is advised.
Live from Tampa Bay, you are tuned in to Hoppy Hour.
He is the voice of a generation that got screwed by the baby boomers. Welcome back to Hoppy Hour.
Hoppy Hour. Hoppy Hour. Hoppy Hour starts in 4, 3, 2, Hoppy, Hoppy, Hoppy. This is Hoppy Hour with Hoppy.
What's up? This is Hoppy Hour. I am your host, Ryan Hoppy, and let's get right into it. I listened to this guy a few times during the week, and I am a huge fan, from the Justin Scott and Spiegel Morning Show on 98 Rock in Baltimore. Justin Schlegel is on Hoppy Hour. What's up, man?
What's going on, Hoppy? How you holding up, dude?
I'm great, bro. I am so happy that this interview is going down right now, because last week there was an echo where every time you were talking, it sounded like this, right? It was like an echo. I'm doing the echo a little effect right now.
Yeah, you know what it was? Is you got a little bit of an echo. You got a little bit of loop back too, which means when I would speak, I'd hear myself a second later.
Yeah.
And have you ever, I know you have, you've hosted a ton of events, you're all over town, where sometimes if you've got a big PA that you're on the mic for and you hear yourself just a beat later,
yeah,
it just scrambles your brain. And you start talking all slow. Do you know that that just happened at a major event around here? That if you go watch footage for it, you can hear me talk and it sounds like I'm having a stroke. We were at the Polar Bear Plunge 2024 Special Olympics Maryland shout out. And for whatever reason, just the PA that they had set up, however long it take my voice to make all the way down that big sound noodle of a cable back to the speaker, I heard myself a half a second later. It made me talk real slow. And people are like, did he get drunk before he got on stage for a Special Olympics benefit? I'm like, no, it's the sound. But you sound great right now, man. Crystal clear.
Thank you. It's really funny. There's times in life that you get really nervous. If a cop is behind you and you're driving on the highway, other examples come to mind. But man, there is that panic. Like last week when the board wasn't working and I was talking to you or you at the Special Olympics event, there's that like panic where it's like you want everything to go well. And I'm learning along the way since COVID how to be a better engineer at these things. But where I worked at for 7 years, I was just the talent. And it's kind of like after COVID, I feel like talent got thrown into having to learn these things. And at least for me, in my experience in radio in the past, engineers would just fix the problem, but never really teach what the problem was.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And I think because of during COVID, you kind of had to become a little bit more multifaceted. For example, during COVID, everybody worked remotely to various stations. In my station, 98 Rock in Baltimore, the flagship of the Baltimore Ravens and Orioles, might I add, we had to work remotely except for me. I came in to run the board and to operate everything. My co-hosts, Josh Spiegel, Scott Reardon, even my producer, were all in separate buildings, rooms, or just at home. And if something went down, if a feed broke, if anything got messed up, I had to talk to an engineer, and the engineer wasn't there. So the engineer was forced to teach me to do what he would usually do quietly, in silence, gruffly, going outside afterwards to cuss my name and have a cigarette. He then had to walk me through it to where I was sort of forced to become, much like you, a little bit of an engineer. And I feel more diverse and capable for it. So maybe something good came out of one of the most nightmarish periods in modern history.
It really is crazy to think about the fact that COVID happened, and it felt like it was such a long time in the moment, but you look back on it and it really wasn't that long of a time. It's very weird.
Oh, dude, it just happened, man. It just happened in the blink of an eye. I mean, it was yesterday. It's crazy. I mean, it was only 2020 into 2021 where we were still, you know, I was reaching and grabbing doorknobs with my hand. I'm buying survivalist supplies. Hoppy, I'm not sure how deeply you lost your mind, but I started making like allegiances with neighbors. Like, okay, We don't know how bad this thing's going to go. So we got to wall off each end of the street. We got to kill the people across the way. We're definitely eating the Hendersons. We could grow crops. We can combine our families. I've got survivalist supplies. I get to be king 1 month. You get to be king next. I went crazy. I bought so many canned goods. I bought survivalist, like emergency blankets, kits, portable radios. Bought solar panels. Oh, I lost it. I went way off the deep end. And if you listen to any like broadcasts around that time, May and June, I was in full Mad Max mode. Mentally, wasn't doing great, but things are much better now.
I don't know. Florida was just different. Florida never really shut down. Like, it's fascinating to hear about everybody I know up north and how radio was different here. And I feel like March and April and early May, it was really shut down, but then by like June, there was that like weird rule that was put in where it's like you can sort of be at a bar, but we're just going to begin opening bars anyway, and nobody was going by the rules. That I was living in a small little house in this weird part of St. Pete where I had like a ton of sex offender neighbors near me, so I never really spoke to my neighbors, so I just watched a lot of TV. I watched Ozark. I actually didn't like Tiger King because it reminded me of everybody in Florida, so it kind of hit too close to home.
It's like I live next to this dude. So a couple of things I gathered from that. A, if I come to visit, when I come to visit, I'm going to keep my 8-year-old son here. Second thing, if you think back, remember how hard the world clowned on Florida at the time? Oh, my God, it's just Caligula down there. Mm-hmm. Sodom and Gomorrah. You guys are a bunch of just, you know, cave wall licking mongoloids. What the hell are you doing? Now, fast forward 4 years later, you guys actually were kind of ahead of the curve. You guys were actually like the way they're now. They're like, OK, you got to be apart for 8 days. I mean, 5 days. I mean, 2 days. 6 feet. I mean, 3 feet. It's like the goalposts have moved so much that Florida was just like, you know what? Screw it. If I'm going to cough myself inside out, I'm going to do it with a margarita and a Bucks jersey on and live a little bit of life. Meanwhile, up here, we're like screaming at each other for even making eye contact with one another. I filmed myself at a park walking by somebody who was walking their dog outdoor. We didn't have masks on, whatever. Dude, you would have thought I was broadcasting from inside of a psychiatric facility for the criminally insane. I got a text from someone that I worked with back then, no longer, losing their mind that I walked that close to another person on a path in the park outside screaming like, you know, you're bringing that virus home and you've got children and the elderly. What's it like being the Grim Reaper? I'm like, what it's like is me wanting to get into the car and head south to Florida and basically just live until the world sort of gets its head out of its ass. But good for you in Florida. Genius is never recognized in its own time. You guys had it right. We were wrong up here.
I don't mind people moving down here, but I feel like there should be a rule where if you were ripping into Florida 3-4 years ago, you shouldn't be allowed to live here.
Yeah, that's going to keep about 97% of the country out of that state.
It'd be nice.
Sorry about that, pal. Yeah. I can only imagine you probably actually want to expel some people. Me, I'm more of a white trash, you panhandle kind of guy. Somebody that spend time with people that had a relative teach them the French kiss. Not really into the Miami scene. Ugh. Tampa sounds fun. Orlando, I visited before. All of the water was Monster Energy drink. And everybody is forced to wear shin length basketball shorts, even in nice restaurants. That made me feel comfortable. Went to Universal, went to Disney, still digging out of that financially. So, you know, I did like the weather and the people were nice. And it was cool getting to meet a 33-year-old grandmother.
Oh, my God. I mean, that's not false. I mean, down here, bro, if you go to this area called Newport Richie, there's moms that get pregnant at 15. And I'll be on Tinder and Bumble and I'll match with like a 28-year-old. And she's like, oh, yeah, my kid is 14. And I'm like, wow.
I'm doing the math on that. That's not great. That's not great. Like both of you guys got your licenses around the same time.
I know. And it's crazy because there's something about Florida where it's very promiscuous. Like whenever I go home to Chicago, And I tried to go on Tinder or Bumble. All the girls want like a formal first date and they want to look for a relationship. And down here, girls would be like, you want to come over? It's not as much as it used to be because a lot of women now are trying to find the right one, even though their body count is high and it's bizarre. But it's just down here, man. I wish you could have been here in my era on Tinder in Florida in the 2010s, bro. It was the Wild West.
You know, I've never done the Tinder thing. I've had friends on it. I'm in a long-term relationship with a girl now that Tinder kind of snuck up on the world and I never did it. I think the closest I ever got to like online dating was the Craigslist Casual Encounters website, which really was basically the same thing. Me, guy named Justin, 28, white, bad back, dysfunctional crotch, you, woman, covered in moles, blonde hair, buttery, missing an eye, most of her teeth, including some of my favorites. Let's meet in the woods, box spring. I'll bring a couple of seltzers. You bring a Camel Light. You get to go first, then me. We high five at the end. I'll send you back to the center, and I'll go back to that home front wed mothers that I'm staying in. That's sort of what I did with the online dating, was a lot of like Craigslist crap back in the day. I probably have just the most toxic blood in the world. But as I like to say, Ryan, you can't be diseased if you never get tested for it.
That is kind of the way I live my life, my friend. I'll tell you, like, how do I word this? It's not like I feel like I have something, but I just kind of turned a blind eye to it and go, whatever. I don't see anything down there. You know what I'm saying?
That's what I'm talking about, buddy. Raw dog Hoppy is what we're going for here.
Well,
that's what I'm talking about. Tell yourself it's an ingrown hair.
You know what I have to tell you? I've told my other guests this, and I love hearing their reaction. I'm going to tell you right now, in August, it'll be the 2-year anniversary of when I got a vasectomy.
Brother, I could not be prouder of you for cutting off the boy broth spigot. The next time I see you, don't just get a high five anymore. You get a thick hug and a kiss on the cheek. You see, I didn't do that. I ended up getting a vasectomy about 4 days late after I found out that I snuck one past the goalie with a girl. And now I've got an 8-year-old. And luckily, we were together for quite some time, first 6 weeks. And then I found out, I guess we're going to know each other for eternity. Yeah. And 4 days later, I went in there and got the whole thing done. Hey, let me ask you this. Did you ask your doctor if you could watch?
Watch him do it?
Yeah.
I was all pain medged up. And the best part was I didn't really watch. I was laying back, but I didn't feel anything. I also took some edibles and smoked a lot before, so I was just out of it. And my favorite part is they're just playing with my balls, and we're talking about our favorite Madden video games. It's one of my favorite moments in life was we're just like, oh, yeah, the one with Michael Vick on the cover. What about the one with Vince Young on the cover? And they're just like...
Jesus, dude, did you get your vasectomy done in a strip mall in between like a Papa John's and a dry cleaners? You got a guy, he doesn't even have like a doctor's outfit on. He's got like a diehard promotional shirt, cut off camouflage shorts. He just got back from the Kid Rock cruise, cracks his knuckles, puts on a little Purell and says, all right, let's go ahead and adjust those avocados.
It was very professional.
Wow, that guy's casual. I like that. No, I like that you went in there buzzed up. No, mine felt pretty good. He did the numbing, the local anesthesia around this cute little candy corn penis of mine, did the thing, and I was awake for it. For those that aren't aware of how it works, they pull out just a little bit of that internal spaghetti, snips it, burn it, stuff it back in. And I ask, I was like, hey, can I look? And he goes, you're the first person to ask me if they could ever watch. Go ahead. And I looked over, they had sort of like a little barrier sheet to keep me from being able to see, but they brought that thing down. And I got to see a little bit of the inner workings of my walnuts. Not impressed by what I saw. The smell was off-putting. How did it smell to you when they were cauterizing? When they were cauterizing
your junk? I kind of forgot about that.
Awful, right?
Yeah.
It's got to smell like a cannibal's cookout.
Dude, and then it's just weird because the guy, because I was 28 at the time, the guy was like, you sure you want to do this? And I was like, yeah, because I... I could get it reversed if I wanted to. I have like 4 years left before then it's permanent. But like, I'll go to places and I just find kids repulsive and they're just being kids. And I'm like, shut the fuck up. And right when I'm thinking that in my head, I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I was meant to be a dad. Like, I'm not talking myself down, but it's just the fact that I just get annoyed with kids just being kids at like Publix or wherever. I go, I don't know if that's for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, I never had any plans to be a dad, and now I am. And what's interesting is, you know, I never thought I'd be a father or would be very good at being a father until you have a kid and you have to do it. And then you realize when you're in the middle of it, God damn, I was right. I'm really bad at this. And he's 8, can barely read. he still doesn't know what his own name is. I feed him 3 or 4 times a week. Sweet kid, mostly growls at me and lives in the attic. At some point, we're going to pick a last name for him. I have no idea what I'm doing. I have literally no idea what I'm doing. And I'm a stepdad, too. So I've got one of my own, 2 stepkids. I hug him goodnight. The other 2 get a nice crisp handshake. So you did the right thing. You by cinching that, you know, that boy broth spigot. You're not going to have any little hoppies running around after you decide to throw ropes in some beer cart girl behind a Wingstop.
Well, about 7 years ago, I got engaged at 23. I met this girl that was, now listen, I was immature and we weren't meant to be. I was 23, she was 19, but she was batshit crazy. Like, she wanted to be a mother. And there was maybe 2 or 3 times I did complete the task, but she never got pregnant. But then we would just have sex and I would maybe like pull out or something. And she would always tell me, I'm pregnant. And I think that kind of like scarred me, where there was times I'd be like pacing back and forth in my house, like, please don't be pregnant. And she never was pregnant. And I think that kind of...
Yeah, she probably just had to take a dump.
And she would like
take... That's probably all it was.
And she would like take the test, and the test would like have like one small little line along with the other line, and it would just be a like those like negative tests that are just kind of wrong. She'd be like, see, I might be pregnant. She dumps me, and then 6 months later is married and pregnant, and I go, I'm glad you got what you wanted.
Yeah, who knows, man? Maybe you were shooting blanks. Who knows? Maybe she was pregnant. She was just pissing on a COVID test and had no idea. Maybe she was buying those tests from a dollar store. But I'm glad you were able to make your way through the unexpected baby minefield, because instead of the happy hour, you're actually at happy hour, throwing back rum and cokes, wondering why God's turned his back on you, because there's a screaming toddler waiting for you in your 1-bedroom Tampa Bay efficiency.
1-bedroom, it's just an efficiency, my friend. I have the cheapest place for a nice place. I pay $1,200 a month, and it's the cheapest.
Good for you.
It's the cheapest, nicest place. Everything else is it's very well spaced out. It actually is very nice. But for like 7 years, I lived in like this shack, and off of 22nd Avenue North. It was like where all the sex offenders lived, and I was. The crazy part, I was paying $550 for that place. Now it's more expensive than my nice place. It's insane.
Tell me how handsome you felt in that neighborhood, too. Because, Ryan, I'm very familiar with you. You have a very boyish demeanor. You got a slender build, fat little onion ass on you. You got the legs of a runner. You're running around there. You might be in your 20s, but from a distance, after a couple of Coronas, some of those guys that aren't allowed anywhere near a Chuck E. Cheese anymore are probably looking at you going, that dude might be in 9th or 10th grade. You're getting whistled at. You know, there's a bunch of guys that have to introduce themselves to their neighbors legally, seeing you swing that crumb cake of yours in the park going, God damn, if I didn't have this ankle bracelet on, I would dive on that slender little slab over there, that walking fleshlight. Oh my God. I would bathe him in kisses right now if I wasn't being tracked by a satellite for what I did inside of a McDonald's play place back in 2004.
Wow. I like how it was exactly 2004 at McDonald's. Like, that analogy you had was spot on. I had a neighbor that he had an ankle monitor on, and he had this field next to him where like you could park cars in that, and he would like be on the fence trying to lure people over. And whenever a girl would like Uber to, and here's the best part, his charge was false imprisonment. of a child.
What the hell?
Yeah, and girls would like Uber to my place, and he was at 2009 28th Avenue North. I was at 2010. So a lot of the Ubers would take the girls there, and the girls would call me and be like, where are you at? And I'm like, no, I'm in this area that's more hidden. And then, I got out of there. It took 7 years, though.
I can only imagine that guy had like a couple of Uber drivers that he worked with that he just texted them on the sly. I'll double whatever she's paying you to bring her over here. Drop her off in the front yard in that patch of grass. It's AstroTurf, and it falls down into a pit filled with foam blocks. I also love the term false imprisonment, which leads me to believe that there's some sort of true imprisonment where she's like, hi, I'm here to live against my will for the next few months while you use me as some sort of unwilling sex toy. I'm Deirdre. Where should I put my bag? True imprisonment from the makers of True Detective comes true imprisonment. Ryan, you gotta get out of that neighborhood, dude.
I did.
You're too cute. Not gonna show up for your shift, dude.
I got out 3 years ago. I moved in with my ex, who was a radio listener, and then I dumped her 2.5 years later, but I was able to move on up out of there. Now I want to ask you, over the years, did you ever date a listener?
Nah, I'm not a fish off the company peer type. That's one of those ones where I had some really good advice from some elder statesmen that had maybe made that mistake. And yeah, don't do it. The minute you said you moved in with a listener, I retracted the hug I gave you from the vasectomy thing. I was like, I always thought Ryan might have a little bit of brain damage, and that's confirmed. You don't want to go anywhere near. Plus, listen, our listeners at 90 Rock, they're the greatest. I couldn't ask for, like we say, we don't have fans, we have friends. But if you're like, if you're really into me and you're really into my show, like really, 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 really into anything I do, I do want to pull you aside and ask, like, were you born like 2 months early? What happened? Did you maybe ingest mercury when you were six? Like, thank you for listening, but if you're way into me, I go, come on, what's going on with you? Point at the doll. What happened? Camping trip 87, that one uncle out on work release. You don't ever want to move in with a listener. Hang out, have a party, chill out after the event, but like move in or lay lumber with, you know, Paulina from Parkville. No, she's going to be standing over you in the middle of the night with clown makeup and a steak knife.
It wasn't Parkville. It was Brooksville.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about Parkville, Maryland. Okay.
No,
Parkville,
I'm just saying,
not too far up the way.
Parkville might be the Brooksville of Maryland. Brooksville is like this area where you can get like a nice house for cheap, but it's like 70 minutes from Tampa, and that was where my old roommate lived. Ah, man.
Well, hopefully you learned your lesson, man. Hopefully you know not to dip your pen in the company ink anymore, because technically we work with listeners in a way. So don't smash anybody at the station. I don't care how cute that new promotions assistant is. She's crazy. And don't smash anybody at the grand opening of that Wendy's where they're giving away free classic doubles for a year to the first 100 people in line before 6 a.m.
I worked at a radio company in Tampa that plays hip hop music, and allegedly the morning host, I'm saying a lot right now, but I don't really care. The morning host would all of a sudden during their hip hop concerts, he would find the hottest promotions girl, and all of a sudden they would become really close friends, and then she would get to meet all the rappers at the hip hop shows, and then 6 months later didn't want to come back to the job. And it was rinse and repeat.
That's got an odd stink about it. Yeah, that's one of those ones. That's why I'm so stoked for where I work. Like 98, there's no culture like that. Like any of the assistants we have and promotions people and intern, like they're showing up respected and leaving respected. No one's being coerced into the back of a van with an eight ball and some candy. It's a good time there. It's a good, safe, accepting time, because you know there was a time in radio radio before you and I, where it just sounded like a penthouse forum, where it just sounded like, well, that's when she came upstairs. I laid down a tarp. She signed a waiver. We both swallowed some antibiotics. And the next thing you knew, I was taking her to the ER. None of that. Boy, that's real sketchy. If anybody wants to meet, I don't know, Seether, just ask me and I'll see if I can get them to meet you. And if you have a good time, that's all I ask in return.
So I was Googling you getting ready for the show, just trying to see like everything you're up to. And I came across an article. And now I'm an obvious radio geek as well. So I wasn't really alive and I wasn't really old enough to listen to this guy, but I've listened to it online and I'm a fan. And I also saw you're a fan of the Grease Man.
Doug Track, yep.
What do you think of him? I listened to a lot of it on YouTube, and I like the way he used sound effects and music beds.
That's what I loved about him. I am a fan of radio even before him. And to me, Doug Track, the Grease Man, who had a pretty ignominious end to his pretty major radio career.
Yes.
You could look it up, listener, do your own research. But if you can separate the art from the artist, he was, to me, the last of the great radio drama comedy. You see, back in the day, they used to have much like television programs, like your Two and a Half Men's and your Young Sheldons or whatever. They would have sitcoms on the radio, and they would have a full accompaniment suite of actors, voiceover talent, sound effects specialists that you would tune in every Sunday to hear, like Game Smoke or Gunsmoke or Johnny Dollar or The Shadow. And it was a full half-hour radio drama. Well, Grease was like the last guy to do that. And the way he did it, with carts and CDs and non-digital sound effects, this guy was playing stuff off of analog, which is unbelievable. I mean, I've got a suite in a program called Stinger, and Stinger just lets me play touchscreen sound effects, or I could use a mouse. I load them up, 64 sound effects per page, 20 pages, and I can bounce around pretty quickly. There's footage of him on the air taking out and putting in basically 8-track cart sound effects, and he's having to fire them off all individually. And the minute it plays, he takes it out and slams in a new one, all while doing a voiceover character and having a story and cracking jokes. I mean, it's watching a master at work. You ever see any of those weird, I don't even know what the hell you call these things, but that weird like guy in the park, the busker that's on a bike, that's playing like the cymbals,
yeah,
a guitar, his feet are on the piano, his head is shaking a tambourine. He's got like a, I don't know, a something like a tuba in his ass. That's what this guy did with sound. And it's fascinating that he did it so well with such archaic technology compared to what we have now. And I wish the radio drama would come back. NPR sometimes plays them on the weekends and they're fun to listen to. They're obviously a little outdated, but I loved it. And I thought he was brilliant.
Yeah. And going with your show, I was listening on TuneIn, and the TuneIn app was annoying because every time I would click, it would air like 7 commercials. So I got the 98 yeah. Rock app this week, and I've been listening when I'm at work.
Yes, sir.
And you guys definitely remind me of, like, with the sound effects, a little bit of Grease, but you guys are like the last of the dying breed of like a true rock morning show, similar to like Opie and Anthony. Like, you guys were literally making me laugh out loud. I feel like most shows now are so like, I don't know, formula, and it's like you guys have like a formula, but you also just like shoot the shit, and to me that's like a dying breed.
Well, you know what we do, and I appreciate the compliments and the observations, you listen with the connoisseur's ear, is that we walk the path that was paved by an Opie and Anthony, by a Stern, by a Don and Mike, a Grease, a Kirk, Mark, and Lopez, you know, in our own market. I mean, Elliot right down the way.
Yeah.
I'll never pretend I'm not a fan of Elliot. The guy is a
Elliot's
genius.
Great.
The Junkies. Oh, Elliot's brilliant. The Junkies in D.C.
Yes,
have just been an institution. So I got so much good radio around here to glean from. One thing we do specifically, and I can't speak for other shows, I know this happens happens a lot in pop stations, a lot of like mixed stations around the country, is there's a lot of like, you know, I hate to pull back the veil, but the War of the Roses is completely fake. It's voiceover talent. The second date update, it's voiceover talent. It's a lot of, it's very jive. I was once asked by a program director to use voice talent on a show that I did pre JSS, and it came across as jive and fake, and people sniff that shit out so quickly, and then the stink of it's on you. They'd rather something be inelegant and yet authentic versus razor sharp and full of shit. And that's why we don't use voiceover talent or anything. We sometimes will do a call segment and no one will call, and like, all right, I guess that one didn't work out. We had to spin our wheels for a little bit. Other stations will have voiceover talents hired, ready to go, that none of the calls are real. They're people that they've contracted to call. My goodness, that one topic about the worst Valentine's Day gift ever. Well, listen to this, Stinky and Pinky. And it's like, it's full of shit. It's not real. And another thing we really try not to do, not to say we don't ever do it, we try and avoid prep services. We'll look at them to see, hey, what's going on that day? What's people talking about? What's a big story? Maybe an idea for something. But we try to not lean on prep services because they're universal amongst the radio industry. If we're looking at them, someone else is looking at them, their competitor's looking at them. And sometimes you hear two stations doing the same break in the same day. Well, that's because they both went to a prep service. Dr. Dave's Ultimate Prep, for example. You'll go on their complete sheet on the same day because it updates every day. And you'll both look at it. And if you both go, oh, that's pretty interesting, let's do that, you run the risk of being the exact same as the guy across town. And that's when people go, wait a minute, how are both of these stations talking about the same thing same day? And that's when the jig is up and they kind of see, you know, Oz behind the curtain of what's going on. So, yeah, we try and map the whole show out every day, every break. It's all planned. What we're going to say in the break isn't, but we know the topic at hand, what we're going to talk about. Now, we don't come with any jokes ahead of time, or if I think of a line the day before, maybe I'll break it out. But we always know where we're going, but we never have to be adhered to that roadmap. If something great happens, we will veer. We'll move on from it. But we always we're well planned, but we have wiggle room.
So on the dating apps, girls will be like, "Oh, what do you do for a living?" So I'll tell them, and I love ruining War of the Roses and Second Date Update for them. They're like, "Do you do that Second Date Update segment?" And I'll be like, "Do you mean the one that's fake?" And they're like, "What do you mean?" And then I break it down for them, and I love the feeling of telling them that it's fake. It's the best feeling ever.
It does feel really, really good. And I'll even one of the things we do with our show and our station yeah, is really good about admitting its own flaws and things we change. You know, and sometimes people have a perception of perfection. We did a thing years ago, and I have a particular hatred for this because this was the show that replaced my night show when I was bounced. Well, they replaced it with a thing called the Mob Monkey. And the Mob Monkey was basically a service where you could call in or vote on the next song. It put the control of what we play back into your hands, blah, blah, blah. And they had a legitimate goddamn monkey sound effect playing in between everything. Like the show was hosted by a monkey. Now, no one thought there's a monkey sitting in there. They know, okay, it's just sweepers and bumpers and sound effects. But what they expected was people to call in and say, I'm voting for Disturbed next. I'm voting for Linkin Park next. I'm voting for 3 Days Grace next. Well, no one called and no one gave a shit. People are just like, play good music, I will listen. Don't give me a job to do. Don't make me work. So you know what they did? They started hiring voice talent. And they had voice talent call. Now, this show only lasted about 9 months before 90 Rock realized, hey, this is dog shit, we're pulling the plug. But what the issue was that they hired and they sent over scripts. Those Second Date Update, those War of the Roses, they send voice talent scripts. Yes. This is what you are going to say. Well, they would do the same for the callers on the Mob Monkey. But the issue was that they didn't know how to pronounce towns in Maryland. So you'd get people calling in, sounding like the goddamn movie phone guy, who didn't sound anything like a dude from Essex, some stumbling, gray-gummed, tobacco-chewing, cross-eyed, unibrowed zilch, who I love. You'd get some guy that sounds like he's narrating an audiobook going, "Hey, Bob Monkey, it's Roger from Dundalk. And man, oh man, I sure could hear some Iron Maiden right now. Hey, Bob Monkey, it's Lisa from Glen Burnie. Can I get some Linkin Park? That'd hit the spot. Hey, what's going on, Bob Monkey? It's Roger from Timonium. Is there any way I can hear some Guns N' Roses?" And they would fuck the towns up. And it sounded so jive and so BS that they ended up pulling it. And that was the last time I think the station, it was a very brief downtime, that used any type of prep service, anything. And that was all old management, different time. We've got, honestly, probably the best managers in radio now who much prefer us to be authentic and let us do what we do with little involvement, which is very rare for radio. We've got a crazy good GM, an incredible program director, a guy named Rick Strauss. He actually put together Kirk Markin Lopez back in the day, and now he's in charge of JSS. And he lets us be us and doesn't expect us to flub anything, or not flub anything, that's not the right word, to jive anything, to fake anything. He doesn't expect us to do any of that sort of stuff. So we're pretty lucky there. We don't have to deal with any of that second date update or War of the Roses crap. If it works, it works. Great. If it doesn't, hey, we know what not to do, but we don't hide our flaws at all. And people appreciate that. We're not trying to be as big as the rock stars that we play. We are just regular people with a very cool job.
I definitely get that vibe from you, Scott, and Josh. What is it like working with them each day? Because you guys definitely have different personalities, which is what I think makes the show work so well.
Oh, dude, it's the best. It's the absolute best. I mean, Josh was put on this earth to do news. Josh was put on this earth to do news. Lamar Jackson was put on this earth to be an elite quarterback. Tony Hawk was meant to have a skateboard under his feet. So it's very rare and a blessing for someone in life to find the thing that they were meant to do. So Josh was put here to do this. And stories are what stories are. It's like a sports score. It doesn't matter really what the score is. It depends on the person telling you how the game played out, how the each individual quarter of the football game went. Josh does that with news. Josh knows that, you know, this one person did this thing in news, and those facts of the news story will stay the same from reporter to reporter, newscaster to newscaster. But it's the way he says it. It's the way he delivers it. It's the weird angle he hits stuff from that literally no one else in broadcast radio in the country or history has ever done news the way that he does news. So you'll hear a story on our show that every other news organization is covering, but you'll never hear it the way he does it. In the audio accoutrement that he puts with it, the sound effects and some of the music accompaniments and his songs, all done in-house, no prep services out of the place. He does it all in the studio, usually day prior, maybe morning of, if something's breaking. So you got that. And then Scott, what's brilliant about Scott is that Scott was a producer for so long with two major market morning shows, first in Albany, New York, WGNA Radio, and then with Mickey and Amelia on 98 Rock. So he has this brilliant producer's mind of knowing where to have a break go to get the most out of it, or how to take something and move it along because it's not working, or how to take something that I might not see is worth talking about. And he goes, no, let's stick with this. Let's expand it. So we have a great producer. His name's Joe Stamboni, an associate producer named Kobe. They're both awesome. But to have a host that's got a producer's background and a producer's brain is brilliant. Plus, he's also not from Maryland. He's from New York. He's from Long Island, spent a ton of time in the city, spent a ton of time in Albany. So he's got kind of a New York edge to him that he's been here for the majority of his adult life, but he still has kind of like a fun outsider perspective of some stuff, because I love Maryland, but Maryland can kind of be up its own ass every now and then. You know, we want to sprinkle Old Bay on our lover's genitals to make it taste even better. And he hits us with different angles from being a New Yorker, New York State guy, to where, I mean, it's two of the most perfect personalities I could ask to work with. And I play fart sounds. So that's what I bring to the table.
How long do you think it took until your show got really good?
I don't even think it's there yet. I like doing it. I'm never going to say that our show is really good. I'm very proud of it, but I would never be someone like, oh man, our show's really good. We've done really good breaks. We've had some really memorable moments. I still think the best version of us is on its way, but us getting our legs under us and being a very serviceable, okay, this thing's working show, it took about a year or two. It did. Because, I mean, if you want to pull the curtain back a little bit, when, you know, Mickey and Amelia took over for Kirk and Mark back in the day, those were the old show, Kirk, Mark, and Lopez, Kirk, Mark, and Spiegel at the time. Kirk and Mark had been together for a decade, legendary show. Well, Mickey and Amelia had been together for quite a few years and really, really were good. They gelled very well. So when it came time for them to move on, Kirk and Mark, to another station, they basically just took Mickey and Amelia and put them in mornings. They already had a show. They just did it in mornings and got a great new producer, Scott. Josh, the news guy, stuck around. He's a genius, and boom, he got a show. With us, we found out on Friday one day that we were the new show on Monday. They're like, Justin, you do afternoons. Scott, you're now a producer and moving to a speaking role. Josh, you stay where you're at. And we got a guy named Mike Anderson who does production over on the AM side. He's going to be your producers. You guys should hang out this weekend and get to know each other. And we had 48 hours to figure out really who we were. Now, we knew each other anyways. I was a guest on their show all the time. I knew Scott. I knew Josh. I knew Mike. But none of us really spent a ton of time with each other. Maybe Scott and Josh did. And Mike at one point was Scott's assistant, but Scott had to hand the reins over to Mike. Josh had to learn the idiosyncrasies of two new hosts because I was a new host. Scott was always a producer, so he'd chime in here and there, but he was always behind the scenes. And Mike has to learn how to produce a show for a couple of guys and a producer. He's producing a producer in Scott. So it took a while, man. It did. And it was touch and go. Scott just had a new kid. So he's all kinds of freaked out. He just had a baby. So his old show gets blown up. He's got a newborn. The fact that he didn't end up in a center for the criminally insane is beyond me. That he was able to keep the train on the tracks mentally as well as he did, because I would have lost my mind. And we had a big management change. We lost our old program director. We lost our old GM. There was massive upheaval, and we didn't know how long it would last, but we just celebrated 10 years last year, and here's to hopefully another 10 more.
My favorite memory, I remember it perfectly. It was when I moved to Tampa in 2015. It was right after the Baltimore riots, and Josh went after one of your former mayors, and that was the best radio I've ever heard.
Oh, yeah, we all did. Actually, you might be thinking, we all sort of did, but I'm the one that lost my mind on the air and started screaming at Stephanie Rawlings Blake.
Yes, her.
Who all but disappeared. Yes, I lost my mind and began to scream for answers. Where were you?
That's
you
owe us an apology. I remember all of that. I just loved how you guys go after the mayor, because you listen to radio in other markets and they are very like happy-go-lucky with any mayor.
Yeah, we've always had a great relationship with governors, particularly Larry Hogan, but the mayor, we've not had a great relationship with any of them. We've tried. Lord knows we've tried. But I don't know. We've not had a good run of mayors. God bless Brandon Scott. The guy's trying to do it now. He's never been on. We've been kind of critical of him. Seems like a great guy. Maybe a little over his head. Catherine Pugh went to prison. Stephanie Rawlings Blake, in the middle of the riots, disappeared. Oh, yes. The Healthy Holly scandal with Catherine Pugh, where we almost got in as much trouble as we ever have, because our mayors like to disappear. During the riots, a long time ago, Stephanie Rawlings Blake just fled the city. And
yeah, she did.
No one could find her for like a half of a day. Then Catherine Pugh gets in trouble for the Healthy Holly children's book scandal,
where she wrote
a children's book,
yeah,
sold it to the city and all that. Yeah, then she faked having pneumonia and hid in her house for 30 days and wouldn't come out. So we sent a producer over there with
legendary
a
bullhorn. Legendary moment, yes.
Yeah, we didn't tell our managers about that. We sent a producer over there with a gift basket, and we had our asses chewed out to such a degree that we were like, well, I guess we're done. And then the Baltimore Sun picked it up and some other people picked it up and said, maybe us embarrassing her was what she needed and needed to get moving. Some people actually credited us going out in front of Catherine Pugh's house with a megaphone as a turning point in that whole thing. There's a guy he wrote, he was like, I think embarrassing her, a radio, they call it shock jocks or some dumb shit, was actually a healthy, wink, wink, Holly thing to do. I'm paraphrasing here. Because at this point, she refuses to come outside. She has the world's longest pneumonia, whatever. A couple of goofs in the morning might have actually made, in a strange, minimal way, a bit of a difference. I remember her lawyer in front of a courthouse really being pretty pissed at us. And we were all convinced that she was going to look like Mugatu from Zoolander 2 when she got out of prison, covered in tats, jacked as shit, and ready to kill us. And to this day, if I happen to see her in public, I'll run the other direction. Cause I'm thinking she definitely wants to do harm to me. And, I would understand. So yeah, we have a great relationship with governors, not good relationships with mayors.
Didn't your mayor during the riot, I'm trying to remember this correctly, didn't she pretty much say that to just let them finish it up, the like rioting?
Yeah. Yeah, both of us are paraphrasing here, but something along the lines of let them get it out of their system.
Yes, yes.
And we're all like, what are you saying right now, you crazy person? Which is awesome, by the way, because I lived about six blocks from the riot on the other side of 83, nice. Right at the way from the station. On the other side of 83 where Mondawmin Mall is. I mean, I could basically skateboard over there if I wanted to take some time. That's where it was all popping off at. And I'm sitting up in my window with a weapon like, well, just waiting for it to make its way across the highway. Luckily, never did. But yeah, scary time here. So long ago, 2014, I believe.
I think it was, or was it 2015? Because I moved to, I don't know, it doesn't matter. Because I just remember driving to Tampa, and I remember I was subscribed to Anthony Cumia, and then Anthony had a lot of opinions on it.
Actually, it was 2015. You're correct. It was April of 2015. Yeah. Yes. Cumia is known to have some pretty acidic tastes on some stuff. Yeah. But we went through in our own way. We had the weird zero attendance Orioles game, which people, kind of a little preview for years to come later with COVID. But we had when things were scary and nobody wanted to go downtown, they had a attendee-less Orioles game because of those riots, 2015. Yeah. It was a strange time. So who knows? Maybe Governor Moore will be cool with us. Mayor Scott, if he makes it another term, we'll stop in. We think it's going to be Sheila Dixon. You know, she was another former mayor that got in trouble legally. I don't think you become a mayor in Baltimore unless you have a rap sheet. You know, you got to get into the mind of a criminal by becoming one. So, yeah, it's been an interesting time around there.
How accurate, because it's my favorite show, how accurate is The Wire on Baltimore?
Pretty dead ass accurate. I mean, there's definitely some theatrics. Shout out to RIP. But that area, those projects, I drive past those projects on the way home and I want to shave 2 or 3 minutes off my drive home while taking my life into my own hands.
Yeah.
And you see all those corner boys. I mean, you see all that sort of stuff, the inner workings of the corruption at City Hall, all the way down to the street level. Drug corner violence. I mean, it's, you know, obviously the David Simon series, it'll take some liberties creatively, but for the most part, they nailed it.
Also, I want to ask you, everybody rips into Baltimore. You had Boomer and Nate Burleson ripping into Baltimore after the Baltimore playoff loss. I want to give you the platform to defend Baltimore.
Can't do it because we abandoned the run. Wish we could. If anybody was criticizing us for the play calling that day, there is no way that I could rebut, because we have some of the greatest running backs in the league, one of the top tier running offenses, taking on the Kansas City Chiefs with one of the worst run defenses. And for whatever reason, Munkin, who's our offensive coordinator and is awesome, has completely changed this offense. It was the worst time to have a bad game plan. And I can't defend that AFC championship game. Can't do it. We were the best team in the league. I will die on that hill up until that AFC championship game. I don't know what happened with it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that they might have. I mean, this is me talking out of my ass here, but they're like, all right, you know, we've got a top tier run. They are going to expect us to do it. Let's mix it up a little bit. Let's take a chance, something. Let's throw them off their game. They're going to get ready to defend Gus. They're going to get ready to defend, you know, the tight ends, you know, likely and Andrews. And I think they started going for the long ball and some passes that didn't need to get done. I don't know. I really don't know. And they did a post-season press conference where people asked that question, what happened to the run? I mean, you even saw that in the Super Bowl with the 49ers. They ran more than we did, and they didn't run nearly enough as they should have.
Oh, of course.
I mean, Kansas City doesn't have the best run defense by a long shot. And the last two games they played, both teams like, nah, screw it. We'll throw a couple of slants. We'll throw a couple of long balls, which, you know, isn't Lamar's forte. I'm not sure what their specific clowning on Baltimore was, but if it's got anything to do with our game plan that day, I can't justify
it. Was more,
because we were blowing out teams.
They were saying that the fans were trying to beat them up at the train or something.
Okay, that tracks. Yeah. Again, I can't defend it and say, oh no, that didn't happen. Considering I've had to run from a couple of hooligans downtown myself, nothing to do with the Ravens. That's just mostly us being drunk and pissed off. So yeah, that sucks. Sorry to hear that that happened.
Are there any good parts of Baltimore?
Oh yeah. The whole damn city's great. I love it. Warts and all, but you know, we have a criminal element around there that doesn't fear the local judicial process. The BPD is doing their damnedest, not getting support from City Hall, not getting support from the mayor. You know, there's all these weird policies they have in place of like the three-pillared system of discussion of local use disagreement committees. It's like, no, put people in jail after a crime is committed. And maybe that'll send a message. The city is great. The policies of those in power are shit. We got the best firefighters in the world. We got Hopkins right around the corner, which is an elite level medical facility. The BPD is filled with some of the greatest officers in the world. We got some awesome colleges, Loyola, Towson, Goucher, UMBC. We have the harbor. We got the waterfront. We got Fells, which is classic. Fed Hill is awesome. Everything going on with Sagamore. We got the Pagoda and Patterson Park. I love the outlying areas. As much as people clown on Dundalk, it's one of my favorite areas to go hang out in. We have the single greatest seafood restaurant in the world with Jimmy's Famous Seafood. So let's not even forget that. You want a good breakfast? There's two places that definitely need their own show on the Food Network, Blue Moon, Blue Moon 2. And anybody remember Ace of Cakes with Duff? That dude's from Baltimore. We've got a ton of great stuff. It's just we have a criminal element. That's the same in every city, a Chicago, a New York, a Miami, a
Chicago's
Tampa.
Chicago's the worst. But I hate Chicago.
Chicago's bad. Chicago's very bad. I hear that the air is 60% bullet at this point. But they just don't, our criminals, they just don't fear reprisal from the local process, which is it. But the people in the city are fighting the good fight. I mean, they're trying to dig their heels in and ride this out. And one day we might get somebody in there that does something. But as of now, not so much.
I'm from Chicago, and I used to defend it after I moved 10 years ago. And about 5 years ago, I just gave up. I went, yeah, it does suck.
It sucks. And it sucks to have to, like, throw your hands up about your hometown. It's going to happen. It'll be back. Chicago will be back. When was the last time you went to Detroit, mind you?
I've never been to Detroit recently at all.
Detroit was a living nightmare. It was goddamn Mad Max. It was Fallout 4. And that city has turned itself around. It happens in both ways. D.C. to our south. Anacostia, the Naval Yard, you didn't go anywhere near there as a kid. It was horrifying. It was Judgment Night. And now it's so turned around and so beautiful and so elitely level, clean and upscale. And there's all these great neighborhoods and stuff. D.C. turned it around. D.C. was considered the Super Bowl of crime in the late 80s, early 90s. Detroit and D.C. turned it around. Baltimore can do the same. Then you see the opposite, a city like San Francisco.
Ugh.
Golden, gleaming, iron, aluminum, glass towers, elite level tech junkies, industries move there. It's a nightmare now. It is an absolute nightmare. It's disgusting. It's too expensive to live. Everybody's moving the hell out of there and getting across the bridge. There are just swaths of area that has been taken over by transients. It's not good. I mean, San Francisco's rotting. Everybody in San Francisco's moving to Austin. So it's cyclical. It is cyclical. And Baltimore will be back, but it ain't there now.
I went to San Francisco in 2008 and 2010, and I remember I was like, man, this is the best city ever. I want to move here. And then I'll look at like TikToks and Google videos and YouTube videos of what it's like now, and I go, that is not the place I liked a decade and a half ago.
Nope. Hellscape, man. It's changed. It's completely changed. It just got too freewheeling. It turned into one big-ass Subaru coexist bumper sticker instead of having some pretty hard-nosed policing policies. Sometimes you get a little bit too touchy-feely, a little bit too, oh, tell me what you're going through. This poor criminal, how did we fail you? Now, sometimes you need to chuck him in jail. I mean, sometimes it's just as simple as that. And San Francisco did, I'm not making this a political thing, but, you know, they did get very, very liberal. You know, people hear that word and they go, oh, this guy's a conservative. No, it's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying the term of liberal, loose, freewheeling policies where, you know, instead of putting someone in a facility for the criminally, the criminally overachieving, 15 convictions, they're back out on the street, maybe they should just be in prison forever. We're dealing with that in Baltimore. We've had some horrible stories of people committing crimes that you go and look at the rap sheet and you go, how are they on the street after committing one of these things? One of these. We had a breaking and entering of a woman's apartment. She was a local young woman. She was a leader of industry. I apologize, her name escapes me, but it was a huge story in 2023. And this horrendous son of a bitch breaks into her apartment, does a bunch of horrendous things I won't repeat here, kills her. She's out. They get him, thank God. But then you look at his rap sheet and the amount of offenses on this guy's sheet, Ryan, had you and I committed an eighth of them, you'd think, oh, I go to jail for life. This guy who broke into this woman's apartment, killed her, like in the not too distant past, had also broken into someone's apartment, beat the hell out of a couple, set fire to one of them, sexually assaulted the other, robbed them, and then ran out and was caught and was put in prison and then got out. If you can imagine setting someone on fire after a B&E, sexually assaulting one of them, then committing robbery, you'd go, oh, I guess I'm in jail for the rest of my waking life. Well, not in Baltimore. You're out 2 years later to do the same thing. That's the problem. It's not BPD's catching them. It ain't their job to keep them. It's the problem of the legal system in the city and the people in the position of power. That's what has to change, because the police are doing their damnedest. I got a lot of friends. I'm team police, and they are catching these guys and going, well, see you in a couple months, because I know you're getting right out.
What does Baltimore think of DC, and what does DC think of Baltimore?
Baltimore thinks DC's up its own ass. A little bit. They think it's a little elite, a little nose in the air. I don't think DC thinks of Baltimore, frankly. It's very New York, and of the fact that it's very transient. I maybe I'm not using that word correctly. People don't stay there long. It's one of like people, like they the average residency is like 5 years or something. You get in, you work, you move on. You get in, you work, you move on. Sometimes maybe there's some military around or that you're, you know, stationed somewhere nearby. It's more like people in the outlying areas like Virginia, Fairfax, you know, around those areas that are lifelong, like Commanders fans and Wizards fans and Caps fans. But DC proper, those people are actually pretty nomadic. They don't stay there their whole lives. Like modern New York, people that live in New York now that are moving there, they stay there for years and then move on somewhere else. So I don't know if DC gives Baltimore much of a mind, but for the blue collar, born, raised, live here, educated here, die here, Baltimore types, sometimes they think DC can have their pinkies in the air a little bit towards us. But I've spent time in both. I think it's the fakest rivalry in sports. You know, the Ravens and Commanders or the former the Redskins. It doesn't exist. There's zero rivalry there. And sometimes the fan bases try and make it one, but the teams are like, we never play each other.
Yeah, right.
Preseason maybe. So we're close. We're 45 minutes from each other. We might as well be 8 states away. It couldn't be 2 more different cities that are somehow bumped up against one another. I like D.C. I love Baltimore, but I have no problem with D.C.
Now, you've been doing the morning show for 10 years now, and a lot of times shows that have longevity make it into the Radio Hall of Fame. Does that ever cross your mind about the future of that?
Nah, just making sure that we entertain the listeners. That's it. If we ever made it into a Radio Hall of Fame, what even is that? Are they going to host the thing in a goddamn hojo somewhere along 66? I mean, I don't think Radio City Music Hall wants radio at Radio City Music Hall for any type of big major awards show. So, nah, I don't really think of awards or anything like that. I don't think I individually will ever win a Marconi. Josh has got 7 Muros. He'll have 10 more before he's done. But, nah, we're stoked to keep, first and foremost, listeners happy. Then our advertisers, and then, you know, a lot of the people that we're partnered up with, your Ravens, your Orioles, Maryland Lotteries, stuff like that. Just as long as our partners are happy, first and foremost, our listeners, but then, you know, our partners and our advertisers are happy. That's it. That's all we need. We don't really chase awards. That stuff is sort of empty calories for us.
Can you believe we've been talking for an hour?
My God, we have, Ryan. And unfortunately, I'm going to have to bid you a fond farewell in a little bit because I have a gentleman upstairs currently installing a double stack oven for me.
You are so good, bro. Could you do me a quick favor, though?
What can I do?
Could you tell Scott that I emailed him about him potentially calling into Happy Hour?
I promise I will. I'll do it on Monday when I see him.
I appreciate it, bro. This has been a lot of fun. Real quick, I know you got to go, but I asked Please. You this 8 years ago. And I'm excited, or not excited, but it's crazy to say that Tom Myers has blown up in the last 8 years.
Dude, Tom Myers has exploded. Everybody, bend the knee to Tom Myers. I'm saying that. This yes. is comedian Justin Schlegel saying, I am not as successful as comedian Tom Myers.
Crazy, right?
I'm successful in radio, but when it comes to comedy, 100 times more people know who Tom Myers is than me.
Isn't it crazy, bro?
Dude won. You know what? However you get there, I don't care how windy the path, how bumpy it is, you better put some respect on Tom Myers' name. You put some respect on Tom Myers' name because that dude never gave up. Generations of comics came and went, and Tom is still here, hands up, head down, fighting the fight, and he's in it. He's in it.
I had him on my show 12 years ago when he was an open micer. I don't know how I found his page. And now all these podcasts are ripping into him. And I'm like, bro, you made it.
You made it. Keep ripping in them. Go ahead. Because all it does is keep eyes on the guy. It keeps him relevant. All it does is keep the attention on him while other people come and go. No one gives a shit. Listen, it's like in wrestling. You got good guys, you got bad guys. You cheer me, great. You boo me, great. But if there's no reaction, oh shit, I need to get out of this thing.
I love that.
And that's the vast majority of comedy around here. So, hey, if you want to make him the heel, make him the bad guy, he doesn't give a fuck. He is as popular as anybody this area has ever put out. And I tell you, I tip my hat to the dude.
Yeah, I definitely carry myself not similar to Tom Myers, but that whole, like, you get rude comments on YouTube or Twitter, and I love just sending them smiles and being like, have a good day, sir, douchebag, you know what I'm saying?
Have a great day, dickwad. I'll be here long after you're done.
Well, bro, it's been a lot of fun having you on the show.
Poppy, I've had a great time. Let's do it again in 8 years from now.
Yes, that will be 2032. I will talk to you in 8 years unless you visit Tampa. Or I visit Baltimore.
I will be super dead by then. I can promise you.
All right, man. Talk to you later.
Take care, Ryan.
All right, bye. Goodbye.
Happy Hour.